Good morning. As Charlotte said, my name is Megan Rogers. I'm going to talk this morning about parental consent and confidentiality. Just going to start by giving a brief overview of New York City program, then discuss active versus passive parental consent and the different processes that the five programs here today use across the U.S. And then a little bit about confidential screening and results and parental concerns. So New York City, I think, as Lenore mentioned, is a very, covers a large and diverse population. It's about 300,000 high school age students in the students in the five boroughs alone. And this covers about 400 high schools. And about 35 school-based health centers that cover 100 high schools that serve as sort of a medical home for the students. New York City does a youth risk behavior survey modeled after CDC's youth risk behavior survey of high school students, and generally it's found that about 50% of high school students grades 9 through 12 report ever having had sex. So we know that there's a need out there to get into these high schools. Our program targets public high schools in neighborhoods with high STD morbidity, and about 40 to 45% of the programs that are of the high schools that we have been in with school screening have school-based health centers. As was mentioned by Charlotte, we do school-wide education, voluntary, confidential urine, chlamydia, and gonorrhea testing. We began in the spring of 2006 in five schools with a small private pilot grant. And this year, we're hoping to educate 30,000 youth and test 15,000. So just briefly, some results. 2006, last year, we educated just under 10,000 students at 44 high schools. About 47% of these students were tested. And we found just over 200 positive for 4.8% positivity and treated about 99% of them. This current school year to date, this goes through January, we've educated about 10,500 students in 50 high schools, and about 49% of those chose to be tested with a urine test. And we've had about 400 positives for slightly higher positivity rate this year, and I think that's because we're focusing on schools that are actually in really close geographic proximity to our high rates, schools with high rates from last year. So this is just showing our positivity rate overall of just under 8%. Obviously, there's a significant difference between males and females, with females having over 10% positivity and males just under 5%. So to switch gears and talk a little bit now about parental involvement, I say parental involvement because not every program is using a specific type of consent. There are two types of consent, active and passive, which I'll discuss in a minute. And then a third type of parental involvement, which we sort of term notification, which is basically just notifying parents that the program is going to be taking place, but the parents do not have the option to opt out. And just to mention that there are a lot of different types of approaches to active and parental consent, and that state and local areas really determine what types of consent will be used based upon state law, local requirements, decisions made by Department of Education or IRBs or tribal leaders in the case of IHS, et cetera. So for active consent, or what we call sort of opt-in consent, the definition of this basically requires that all parents return a consent form indicating whether or not they want their child to participate. And so if the consent form is not returned, this assumes a refusal on part of the parent. The main advantage to this is that obviously you know that the parents have received the consent, and so it's ensuring parental support and buy-in. But there are, I think, a number of sort of disadvantages to program reach and participation. Obviously, lowers response rates and can limit participation, and I think most research studies show that research using active consent secures a participation rate of around 40 to 70%, and it can certainly limit the reach of the program. Also, we don't know whether or not non-response indicates disinterest or true sort of opposition to the program. And certainly, it can be costly and time-consuming. Many programs that use this type of process will actually call over the phone or mail to parents to sort of ensure a higher response rate, and that can certainly be time-consuming and costly. So some other disadvantages is that active consent can confer selection bias, where certain groups might be more likely to participate in the program than others. It can underrepresent minorities and students of parents with alcohol or substance abuse problems. It certainly can overrepresent students with higher socioeconomic status and two-parent families. single-parent households or households where both parents are working full-time might be less likely to respond just given time constraints and other competing priorities. So just to define what we term sort of passive consent or opt-out consent, this is a process that requires the parents only to respond if they do not want their child to participate. So a non-response is essentially considered an affirmative response. Generally secures higher response rates, average 80 to 96%, and it's seen as an ethical method of holding up the informed consent principles while securing higher participation. The main barriers to this is just that non-response may indicate either agreement or apathy, it's hard to tell, and certainly low health literacy and language barriers are obstacles to assuring full parental understanding. And in multiracial, multicultural, diverse cities like many of the ones that are here talking today, language barriers can be a sort of a unique, specific concern. So many of you probably know that all 50 states and Washington, D.C. have state laws that allow minors under the age of 18 to consent to STI diagnosis and treatment without parental consent or involvement. In addition to this law, the five programs represented here today in Louisiana and Maryland, physicians are also allowed to inform the minor's parents about STI services if the physician deems that that's in the minor's best interest. Conversely, school-based health centers do require parental consent for students to access their services. However, it's really kind of a gray area, and depending on the school and depending on the school-based health center administration, some will still screen for sexual and reproductive health services given that in accordance with the state law. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about what the five programs here today are using in terms of consent or parental notification activities. In Baltimore, as Charlotte mentioned, their program's conducted entirely through school-based health centers. And luckily for them, they were able to kind of come to agreement with school-based health centers that the SBHCs would agree to screen and treat for STIs without parental consent in accordance with Maryland state law. New Orleans is the only program, I think, here that's using an active consent process. So despite the state law, school officials and the IRBs actually required that they go out and do active parental consent. And so the way that this works is that the STD program distributes written consent form that's sent home to the students. And if that form's not returned, then the STD staff in New Orleans actually calls those parents to try and elicit higher participation rates. And generally, despite having to do that, they're very successful at achieving consent rates between 50 to 75%. Philadelphia is the only program here that does citywide parental notification, so they don't actually have a specific consent process. Their program was approved as non-research, and so it was not reviewed by their IRB. And it was really, I think, the state law permitting STI testing and treatment for minors without consent that allowed them and was sort of used as a justification for them to go into schools without requiring consent. They do have letters signed by the health commissioner and the CEO of schools that are sent out to parents by the schools. In New York City, we use a passive consent process. We did have our program reviewed by the New York City Department of Health and Department of Education IRBs, and despite the state law, they're mandated that we use a passive consent process. Mainly because they felt that doing notification only could potentially be coercive for the students and the parents. So what we do is the schools conduct the consenting process. They either mail home the letter or they send it home with the students. And if the student is opted out, then it's that school or that administrator's responsibility to ensure that prohibit the student's participation. And we generally secure really high participation rates. It's really only about 1 to 2%. Of the student body at any given school that is opted out. And this is just an example of our parental consent letter. It's kind of small, but you can sign by our assistant commissioner, Sue Blank. And you can see at the bottom, there's sort of a tear-off slip, and that's what the parents would actually sign and send back to the principal if they didn't want their child to participate in the program. And Indian Health Service, as sort of has been mentioned throughout the morning, their consent process is really variable and is dictated by the tribe. So despite the fact that minors age 12 and over are required to consent to STI services by law, the tribe still determines what type of consent they want to require. And I believe the most recent tribe that they've been working with is requiring active consent. So So the consent forms are sent home by the school. And unfortunately, they've had thus far some low participation rates, and most of the forms that have been returned have been declined. So you can sort of see that active consent can sometimes be an impediment to increasing participation rates in a given program. So I'm going to switch gears a bit and talk just about ensuring confidentiality. And this has sort of been discussed a little bit already this morning, but as confidentiality is really the cornerstone of all of our programs, we need to ensure that both parents and schools are on board with the confidentiality procedures that we have in place, particularly around testing and treatment. In Baltimore and New Orleans, testing is conducted individually in school-based health centers, so confidentiality is certainly less of an issue if it's not a mass screening program. In Philadelphia and New York City, all students participate in the education piece, complete the demographic information, and then all students are taken to the bathrooms for voluntary confidential testing and decide in the bathrooms whether or not to submit their urine sample. And again, in Indian Health Service is very site-specific. Some sites are conducting testing individually, but they are interested in moving toward more of a mass screening model. This is just a picture of New York City screening materials, and I think Philly's is very similar to this. Basically just a brown paper bag, and then the kit really consists of the urine cup. The yellow form is a demographic form that all students fill out, and the blue form is a results callback card that students can use to get their test results. And we also, on the flip side of this form, list, we have 10 New York City STD clinics within the five boroughs, and so we list the contact information of all of our clinics. The confidentiality of test results is certainly an extremely important thing, because also given accordance with state laws, we're required to only share test results with that individual student or patient. So in order to ensure that that happens, in Philadelphia and New York City, students create a secret password and test results are given to the students by phone. And students report over the phone their secret password, their school, their date of birth, and other identifying information. In New Orleans, until the year 2000, results were actually given personally in sealed envelopes using code numbers. And since 2000, they've actually purchased sort of an automated voice recognition system or automated phone system where students can call in with a PIN number and access their test results through an automated system by phone, which we need to hear more about because we would like to move in that direction soon. In Baltimore, results are given to each student individually in school-based health centers by a nurse or nurse practitioner. And similarly, in IHS, positive or negative results are also given individually by a nurse. So parental involvement is certainly a primary need of a program like this for many different reasons. And in order to address parental concerns and answer questions and make sure that they support the program, we attend a lot of parent association meetings, both pre-screening and then sometimes do workshops after the screening program to answer questions, to gain support, sort of normalize talking about sexual health, you know, in the community that we're in. And parental feedback is generally pretty good. I mean, parents often support STD education. Almost always the education and usually the testing. Sometimes they have questions about the testing. But their main questions about the testing are really around the confidentiality issues. They want to ensure that the testing, screening, and treatment for their child is going to be handled confidentially by our staff. So we talk a lot about that. They're also often interested in obtaining test results of their own, you know, child and concerned about the issue of treatment without their knowledge. And so these are things that are a little bit more sticky situations that we have to kind of talk through with them. And some of the ways that we handle this is we fall back first on describing the law that prevents the health department staff from sharing these kinds of results with the parents. And then we explain that while we're not legally allowed to share these results, or information about whether or not the student was tested, that their own child or adolescent can share that information with them. And so I think, you know, we encourage parents to have conversations with their children prior to and after the program. And I think personally that this is a really great opportunity for parents to talk with their child because, you know, they do have a letter at home. They can sit down with their child and discuss their sexual health needs and whether they're interested in testing or at least just broach the conversation. And of course, all students are assessed for allergy prior to treatment by a physician or a nurse practitioner. And in New York City, our staff bring EpiPens for, you know, the rare potential case of an allergic reaction, although we haven't had any allergic reactions, and I don't think anyone else has either. And I guess just in closing, I want to say that There are really as many different ways of securing parental involvement as there are different kinds of screening programs. And so, as has been mentioned over and over this morning, it's really important to work with your local stakeholders to determine what your individual community needs are so that you can best address concerns. So I'd like to thank, first of all, my co-speakers, and Lenora in particular for helping me set up this symposium. And then from New York City, we have many people to thank. I'd particularly like to thank Sophie Narani, who's our program manager, our public health advisors, our Bureau of School Health, New York City Department of Education, and the Fund for Public Health in New York Community Trust, is who supplied us with our private pilot grant that got us started. Thank you very much.